Can the Uber branding principles be applied to business-to-business brands? That's a question we get asked quite frequently. The short answer is yes, absolutely. But to prove our point, we went out there to take a look at a couple of B2B companies. How about a manufacturer who supplies paper for other brands to print their brochures and the such? Sounds like generic and potentially outdated enough in a digital world? Well, today I'm talking to Christopher Harold, creative director at Mohawk Fine Paper here in upstate New York. And as you will see, Mohawk is applying quite a few of the Uber branding principles and is able to elevate its paper to a level where techie digital brands like Moo.com, Sonos, or Uber actually are willing to pay a multiple over the average printing paper in order to use Mohawk in their own printed matter. If you're in the paper business, you might also enjoy our podcasts with the founder of Moleskine, those little notebooks, or the CEO of Renover, quite sexy toilet paper. If you're in the service industry and think Uber branding can't apply to that, you might want to read our Vanguard investment case study. So we hope that between all of these examples, you will find that there's really no excuse not to elevate your brand and apply the principles of Uber branding. Enjoy.
Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Uber Brands podcast, the podcast in which we discuss brands that are desired beyond price, performance, or reason. Brands that seduce rather than sell and add myth to the material. We call them Uber brands, and that is your host, JP Kuhwein, and occasional co-host, Wolfgang Schaefer. And today will be quite a special episode because we're doing something a little bit different. Instead of talking about business-to-consumer brands, we're talking about a business-to-business brand, and that is Mohawk Fine Paper. And with me here on the phone line is Christopher Harold. Hello, Christopher. How are you?
I'm great, JP. How are you?
Thanks for getting on the phone, which was quite difficult, but you have good excuses. The last time we tried to talk, you just announced that you bought Crane Stationery, which that one is a business-to-consumer brand. So we might talk a little bit about both.
That'd be great.
Why are we talking about business-to-business brands? Some of you might ask. Well, because we actually get quite often this question. I'm not working on a sexy consumer brand, some lifestyle, luxury, or whatever other glamorous product. I'm working on B2B. I'm working in finances. I'm working in services. Does Uber branding apply there? And we think very much it does. You might have seen our Vanguard Investments case study, for example, in the financial sector. We've also talked in a previous podcast to Paolo da Silva, who is in paper as well, in his case, toilet paper. But we thought actually Mohawk would be a great example, and we stumbled over this business-to-business paper supplier when we bought a fresh set of business cards from Moo.com. And you, Christopher, are a supplier of Moo. But before we go into that, tell us a little bit about what is Mohawk Fine Paper.
We're a privately owned paper manufacturer sitting right where the Mohawk River flows into the Hudson River. We've been here as Mohawk making paper since 1931. And our stock in trade is fine paper, which, you know, defined a little more in detail, you know, we're the guys who are making beautiful textured colored printing papers. And, you know, for many of those 87 years, have had a critically important relationship with the graphic design community because, you know, we rely on designers to choose our paper for sort of their most discriminating needs, right? For projects where materials play a big role.
So you are the paper company of the discerning paper user. Would that kind of summarize it?
I think I'd put a finer point on that and say, we're the paper company for the discriminating paper specifier. And that largely points to graphic design professionals. And mind you, for many years, until the early 2000s and the introduction of the web and sort of the tsunami of digital communication that took over, graphic designers were largely print designers. That the end product for decades produced by graphic designers was print. So we have common roots with graphic designers.
And your job is also creative director. Tell us a little bit about your background and what your specific role then is at Mohawk.
Well, yeah, in short form, a rather long career, I finished a Master of Fine Arts degree in photography, thinking I was going to be a college art professor, and quickly found out there weren't and not enough jobs. So I ended up getting a job to get a paycheck. Boy, all the way back to 1990, I ended up here at Mohawk, actually starting a job in sales, calling on designers. And then I started a project working with digital print technology for Mohawk and working to establish how our products might work in new technologies. And that over time, you know, brought me to sort of a different role in marketing, and that would be creative director. So my role is really the brand steward for Mohawk right now, and working to manage the brand and co-manage our marketing efforts with another individual.
So I guess that background gave you some good insights into what designers were looking for. On Überbrands, we talk about beholding the product. I guess you think that your product is in some ways a superior product for a designer to use. Can you describe to us how a designer would know that? Maybe even in a blind test, how does that work for paper?
Actually, it's funny, we built a blind touch test into a recent field guide we published. And the field guide was dedicated to sort of teaching designers how to use colored and textured paper. We created four printed examples, covered them with black paper, and asked users to answer a question, which is printed on the black paper, about the printing underneath the black paper, and just use the feel of the paper to answer that question. And the point there, JP, was to prove the point that the minute we touch printing between our thumb and our forefinger, it's telegraphing at a very emotional level, right? I mean, to that old part of our brain that isn't assigned to language, but it's immediately causing us to sort of make a value judgment about what that might be. So I think it drives the point home pretty quickly, right? I mean, the other thing we share a lot and feel sort of at our core is that what we're making helps make printing more beautiful. I think it makes it more effective. And in fact, because of the way we react to beautiful materials in combination with beautiful design, it makes a longer lasting impact. It makes it more memorable. It's hard to quantify that. I mean, I love what you say about, you know, what's beyond price, performance, and reason. What we make is beyond price, performance, and reason. It's not so much a performance sort of feature benefit story. It's about how can what we make a print project more beautiful, effective, and memorable.
And you call yourself on your website and in many of your materials a company of makers. Can you tell our listener a little bit, in what way are you makers, and how does that make you different from, I don't know, Georgia Pacific?
If any of your listeners have ever been in a paper mill, they could understand this. But, you know, we make paper more slowly. We make paper with different tools, right? Old felts to put marks in the paper to give it texture. We make cotton fiber paper one day and then wood fibered paper or recycled paper the next. We may be making black paper all through the weekend, and then by Tuesday we're making super bright white paper, whereas a very large copy paper mill would make the same thing for 10 days at a time.
That sounds almost like when I talk to craft brands in, let's say, the food area, where it's a lot about batch manufacturing, about, you know, personalization, about making products that larger manufacturers don't make anymore. do designers and the buyers of paper see you that way? Is there a quote-unquote soul to your product beyond just the physical aspect?
You know, I do think there's a soul. We just over the past couple of years, we've really reinvigorated our efforts to invite designers and printers to come visit us at our mill. And invariably, the impression of craftsmanship is immediate because of this small batch paper making that we can do that is reasonably unique to our operation. So that may be a special color. It may be a special finish. For instance, we have a very large customer located in the Bay Area, Minted.com, I can share that because they share the fact that we make their paper for them. And Minted is a social station around. And we just collaborated with them last year and created a product for greeting cards. The first reveal on their website was for holiday greeting cards. It was a combination of textural paper laminated together with a very, very smooth paper. So the purpose of that was if you have a photograph of your family for a holiday card, that would print on the very smooth side, and then that the opposite side would be dedicated to largely text. It was an incredibly unique product and got an enormously strong positive reaction from their user base, which is the consumer, right?
Yeah.
Right? And we all spend so much time, regardless of age, on glass screens that sort of carefully considered and crafted materials feel like they're more meaningful than ever.
So in a way, with your special product, you're handing that on to your customer who then delivers to the end client. So you're kind of empowering or enabling the Moo.coms and others to deliver that kind of special experience and product, soulful product, if you like, to their end customer.
Yes, and I think a customer like Moo celebrates the fact that the materials they use are made by us here.
Right.
Consumers are interested in the provenance of material. Whether it's goat cheese, organic small batch vineyards, or paper, I think we're at a moment in time where craftsmanship and the source is significant.
We also did a podcast with Moleskine. They obviously use paper. They're a business-to-consumer brand. They have this higher mission and this vision of us not unlearning, if you like, to sketch and write, because they do believe, and actually they supported scientific research to show that we're losing a part of our personality if we're losing our handwriting. So that was kind of a higher mission that they have in this digital world with their analog products. Do you have a conscious mission that goes beyond providing superb quality paper to your clients? I saw on your website and on your blog some activities, for example, about starting what you call a write-on movement, where you encourage people to write cards, because the simple fact of just writing to someone has by now become a total blowaway special occasion.
It sure has, right? Yeah, we supported that Write On campaign for a few years. An ingenious pair of companies out in the Pacific Northwest who have come together to foster that campaign. But we bullish on the role that sort of physical artifacts that are paper-based are playing right now in society. And I think their future role, right? It feels very much like on the traditional Mohawk side, where every day we're seeing more and more examples as we create examples for the graphic design community to consider and follow. We're getting that back in the form of real business. So designers are choosing for their clients to introduce very well-considered print and materials in the mix, their marketing mix. And then with this opportunity that was out there with Crane, it felt like a natural extension of what we're doing to, I guess I'd say, double down on the impact of printed artifacts. And of course, Crane Stationery, Crane as a name, has been part of American history since the late 18th century. And we felt like there was a really beautiful opportunity for us to pull that into our family and continue to foster what they've built over so many years and continue to keep that name relevant, continue to foster writing, connections, sort of meaningful, lasting connections between people through printed and handmade artifacts.
Since you talk about family, one thing that I get from your website is that the family aspect, the family ownership is very important to you. My understanding was originally Mohawk was bought by George O'Connor in 1931 because it almost went bankrupt. And he felt, and this is a quote from your website, that Mohawk paper and the way this paper was made and the people who made it felt to him worth saving, which is kind of an interesting way of looking at that. And surprisingly, and in the press release for the Crane Stationery, it was similar. There were statements about that being a wonderful brand that certainly is worth not only saving, but reviving and evolving. Is there something in the Mohawk DNA, a Mohawk philosophy that is about preserving the craftsmanship as far as paper is concerned?
That root system has gone deep, and I think it is really now part of, it's just part of the culture here. It feels like memories are captured on iPhones or other devices, and then they just sort of go into the ether, and we're convinced that consumers really want artifacts that are physical, that are in the real world. So I think the Crane acquisition just feels like such a natural extension of who we are and an expression of that commitment.
Do you also feel or think that this extension into consumer branding opens up an avenue to get more value add out of this craftful way you make your paper? What I mean with that is, you know, it strikes me that we've talked to Shinola before, and they're very successful behind this kind of romantic vision of reviving industries in Detroit and, you know, letting people use their fine motor skills to create something where maybe before they were in the auto industry and now they're laid off. We had this romantic vision of Moleskine to make people write in an analog age and how that is part of their identity. And they do a ton of projects with museums and you know, poets and so on and so on. As a business-to-business, purely paper supplier previously, did you feel limited and being able to leverage some of your heritage because buyers of paper don't care as much as end consumers? Or do you say no, they care just as much, it's just a different approach? I mean, in the end, they pass it on to the end consumers.
It's an interesting question, and I think that the involvement, I'll go back to our discussion about Moo, I would reference again minted.com, I would reference Blurb. Of note, three companies who are who only exist because of the web. Think about that, right?
Yeah.
They only exist because of a digital platform, but the deliverable and what they celebrate is the printed artifact. Each one of them celebrates the source of the material paper they bought, where that they're using, right? They all equally point to Mohawk. So that involvement goes back maybe 7, 8, 10 years. But in that involvement was a really good bridge for us to take this next step, right? We've been kind of exposed to the consumer through those kinds of relationships with Moo and with Minted, and it kind of whet our appetite to go closer, much closer to the consumer.
I quote from some of your brochures and from the blog, you say, we do business based on relationships on a handshake level basis. Handshake level trust comes up a couple of times. I find that very interesting thinking about consumer products. Again, in the business arena, when you deal with these dot-coms, the Minteds, the Moos, the Blurbs, do they also value that? Is that almost rare? Because I guess in the techie, nerdy world, that might stick out. Are people getting romantic about you as a supplier in a way?
I don't know how high the romance level goes, but yeah, Tom O'Connor is the, you know, his grandfather was George O'Connor. He's our CEO. His son, Tom, is coming into the business. In that family, personal, human dimension, it resonates. It resonates with the buyer, whether they're sophisticated tech types from the Bay Area or a small design firm from Chicago or whatever, pick a city. It does stand above the fray. They're genuine people, and they've put that sense of first being human throughout the company. You know, the other thing you may have picked up on is with a family ownership, we make decisions and we innovate for the long term, not the next quarter.
Right.
Right? That could be a new product we collaborate with a customer directly, or the acquisition of something as significant as Crane Stationery.
Right. When we talk about recognizing people that would be your disciples, your advocates, you have this quarterly and you have your blog, and it takes up many times technical aspects, but then also poetry and kind of more philosophical themes relating to paper. And you also support things like the American Craft Council. Who is your, what we call the Uber target? Who is your dream target? The people who you want to love you and to advocate for you and to be your biggest fans?
Our Uber target is clearly the designer or brand owner who have taken responsibility to create marketing materials. That is our target. And the reason we've dedicated the resources to the publication of the Maker Quarterly you're referring to.
Yes.
Or even the content in our blog is, you know, we want to connect on a meaningful level and put content first and speak to designers in syntax and language that they appreciate, with content that's relevant and compelling. And secondarily, bring the print demonstration and the materials along behind. We're always looking to do some provocative demonstration of print on paper, but specifically the Maker Quarterly is a content-driven campaign. And by the way, about five issues in, which is a few years back, graphic designers came back and said, the content is amazing. We're open to having you give us more printed demonstration.
Permission to sell, if you like.
Fair enough, yeah. So we said, okay, well, we'll go a little crazier, and we've had a lot of fun working on this publication, creating graphic design, and it's just an incredible pleasure to work on.
So it's a great example of what we call unselling, when the audience literally gives you permission to sell them a little bit more. Actually, I came across this quarterly working on a project with a architecture studio, and these folks were fully familiar with Mohawk when I told them I would have a podcast with you, and much appreciated a lot of information about colors, typeface use, etc., etc., that they seem to be getting from that source. Also, you mentioned earlier that Mohawk is named after a river, which reminds me of our interview with Renova, which is on the river Almodovar, and they make a big deal out of it. They romanticize their location. Do you do something similar? Is there a myth around your location, the river, your relationship to it, or does that go too deep for something like a business-to-business product?
You know, it's funny. I don't know that we've leveraged the mythological potential of the river. We have two paper mills. Our office is a few miles away from Waterford, New York, which is the older mill, and it sits literally right on the Mohawk River. And with the number and volume of customers who have been visiting us over the past couple of years, it makes a huge impact. I mean, we sort of take it for granted a bit. It's sort of a powerful moment and shows how clearly we rely on the river, and also what a beautiful natural location it is, with this incredible island and waterfall across the way.
Right.
It's kind of,
and it's a, it's
probably do more of it to exploit that meaning in terms of the story.
Absolutely. If you look at when we talk to Freitag, people queue up to look at their manufacturing site in Zurich to see how these bags are made from recycled truck tarpaulin. When you think of Ben and Jerry's, people line up in Vermont to get indoctrinated about their social mission and then eat some ice cream, and it's not for free. You have to buy it. You have to buy a ticket. So this provenance, you know, and this craftsmanship and the sense of place, we think in the age of everything coming from China or somewhere out there and being mass manufactured and us having lost the relationship to it, it's a special experience, I think, for people to see where their paper comes from.
Yes, that site in Waterford by the river also has this incredible brick structure, 18,000 square feet per floor. And we are, spoiler alert, we've just started a process of looking at the possible renovation of that building for a new headquarters. So that would be really taking advantage of the Riverside manufacturing site.
Absolutely. Look at Cadillac building up its headquarters in Soho to give itself a new soul. Look at Shinola kind of creating that. Obviously, that was a shoe shine brand, a shoe wax brand before. I mean, in your case, it's real, right? It's the real deal. That should be even stronger than these artificially created places of provenance. I tried to figure out how much of an impact these softer things like your quarterly, like the film about your manufacturing that I saw on the internet make. And it's a little difficult, but I was surprised. Hammermill apparently is one of the big generic papers. It has 566 followers on Instagram. You have 12,000. So if that is a measure of interest, congratulations. You're way ahead of the biggest kid in town, I guess, when it comes to industrial paper. And you also have 13,000 followers on Facebook. It's not humongous, but it's nothing to be shy about. So there is some pull, but I guess there is more potential, and I hear that you might be working on that. Last question was around the digital world. Interestingly, you brought it up yourself that surprisingly, Minted, Blurb, etc., they come from the digital world, and they almost point you to the potential of having something physical and something handwritten. But overall, how do you view the world where a lot of consumer brands are scared about the Amazons of this world taking over not only the distribution, but also the making of their products because they know how to do it after a while, and even the creating of brands? Do you feel like you are equally threatened of being absorbed by someone like an Amazon or the B2B equivalent, which I don't know, might be Alibaba.com? Or do you think the contrary, that this actually gives you an even better way to differentiate and show that you're not a hammer mill, a Georgia Pacific, or other commoditized paper ingredient?
You know, JP, I think that we successfully been persistent in stating the case for paper, for materials, and how we think it really helps cut through the clutter out there of information. And what's interesting is just in the past week, I just got an incredibly beautiful printed sample of a catalog printed on our paper, not shiny, glossy paper that you would associate with a catalog. It feels more like fine stationery. And that project was for Sonos. It was ostensibly a product catalog, but it was 50% narrative. One of the O'Connor family, who's now living in the Bay Area, in developing relationships and business, had an amazing story of some printed projects that Uber is pursuing. So it's just sort of persistently telling our story and demonstrating what we believe. What we're finding is some of our most important businesses coming from tech, who are embracing print as a tool. And when they do it, they get that they want to do it in a very considered fashion, so that the design elements, the print quality, and the materials that they're printing on telegraph and support their story and their narrative. Yeah, we're used to the threat. Anyone in printing and paper is used to the threat of pure digital communication, but we're seeing some of our most important new business from tech.
And it makes sense to me because, again, we often talk about soul and truth being very important components of an Uber brand. You know, at the end, the proof of the pudding is in being able to charge a premium because people look beyond pure performance. And it seems to me that if you're a tech company and your service is an Uber or some other tech platform, having something that's not only tactile but has even a human story behind it can infuse some of that soul and some of that truth, i.e. real physical presence, to a brand that's otherwise more of a digital manifestation, if you like, if that makes sense.
Basically, we feel like we're enablers. We're helping people make cool things.
Now, to put that in perspective, that brochure of Sonos or of an Uber or the business cards from Moo, what is the kind of premium that people are paying for this kind of paper versus the regular run-of-the-mill standard paper? Are we looking at a few percent point? Are we looking at multiples? I'm sure there's a big variety, but even if you have a range, so our listeners get an idea, because many of them might not be familiar with the business-to-business world.
Oh, you are definitely in the range of multiples. Now, mind you, it may be 2x, it may be less than 2x, but it's significant. The investment that a designer would make a commitment to, I would say it's not insignificant, but the end result makes a greater impact. I can think of one large consumer brand in particular who really published a holiday catalog that was probably, I don't know, they probably printed 800,000 catalogs. And it is a very recognizable brand that embraced something beyond traditional lightweight, shiny catalog paper and drove significant return in holiday 2017 for sale of apparel. I'll leave it at that.
Right, right. Yeah, it becomes very clear to me. It's, you're an Uber brand in the sense of enabling others to get there as well, because you do provide the kind of ingredients that help them tell their story and give more soul and truth to that story as well. Now, and as that, your own brochures and I guess your website as well look stellar. If people want to find out more about Mohawk, what's your recommendation? Where should they go?
For your listeners, if you go to mohawkconnect.com, it's a great place where we can begin to tell our story, and then it's easy enough to connect with us and get some materials in your hands. That's of the greatest importance.
Well, thank you, Christopher, for this quick overview and plunge into the world of Mohawk. Maybe we'll do another one on Crane Stationery in a couple of months to see how that is going.
That would be fun.
Thanks for coming on the show. And you, dear listener, you can always reach us, and that is at info@uberbrands.com, and that's spelled with a U-E, as it should be. Tell your friends about the podcast, tell us about what you want to hear next on the podcast, and then if you seek help elevating your own brand to Uber Brand status, you can write to that same address, info@uberbrands.com. And we'll get back to you. And with that, I want to say thank you again, Christopher, for being on the show. And bye-bye.